Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. My name is Scott Linden. I'm your host. Glad you could join me today. Pretty interesting discussion in store today. If you're wondering what the heck is going on in the firearms world, we'll have an industry insider who knows of what he speaks. Andy McCormick joins me from Legacy Sports. You may not recognize that parent company name, but you'll recognize many of the firearms brands that Legacy brings us, including my favorite, Hoyter shotguns, all sorts of things to learn about the industry from Andy, who, by the way, is a fanatic, versatile dog kind of guy as well, but we'll let him tell you more about that. We're outfitted by Cabela's. We're right here in the podcast studio, and we'll also be talking about public access. I'll have a dog handling and training tip. Hey, maybe we'll go on an adventure or two, some strategies and suggestions. It's all right here on the Upland Nation podcast. So turn up the volume and enjoy. Whew. I joked about it earlier today and probably joke about it again during the podcast. It is hot where I live here in Central Oregon. We already live in the desert, and this time of year, you can tell just by the temperature. You getting up early, you staying out late. Those are the two times when we're getting most of our training in, especially when it comes to road work and that sort of thing. Always looking for a puddle or two to swim in. No, for my dog Flick to swim in. You having any luck with that? I don't know what I've done or not done with most of my German wire-haired pointers, but they just don't like to swim. Luckily, they like birds. Yeah, one plus one equals two. Working so far. You, what's on your training agenda for the week? Maybe it's finishing a dog, non-slip retrieving, steadiness to wing shot and fall. Sounds like an AVDA test or an AKC field trial. Or maybe if you're a retriever guy, most of that stuff with a different name is a NASTRA hunt test. Whatever it is, good luck to you. We are getting a chance to get out and do more of that every week in almost every state. Be safe and get involved with your local club. All right, just a few more things to cover and then we'll get to Andy. First off, thank you to all our sponsors. They give us the time and resources to bring you this podcast. Yeah, it costs money and they are willing to put up much of it. Thank you to Sage and Breaker Gun Care Products, crafted at the highest caliber. Free shipping all the time at sageandbreaker.com. Sign up for their mailing list. You'll get advance notice on all of the good stuff that's coming down the pike. And then when something does sell out, you can still get it before everybody else because you'll hear about it. They'll send you an email. And Dogtra, Dogtra.com is the website. They've always got a bundle deal or some sort of freebie or a little bit of this or a little bit of that, including free shipping on everything over $200. Thank you so much, Dogtra, for your support, especially that TNB dual collar. I can't say enough good about it. Used it this morning, but I'll bore you with that some other time. All right. So on the line from Reno, Nevada, which, by the way, is a hotbed for outdoor sports folks in a lot of ways. And I don't mean just the activities, but I mean the business of outdoor sports as well. Andy McCormick, the Executive Vice President for Marketing and Sales at Legacy Sports. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Scott. It's always good to get a chance to communicate with you, both on business and everything else related to the industry, because we have such a good tie together on that. We seem to always have a good time chatting it up. So I'm really glad to be on phone with you today.
It's going to be hard to on a bird hunting and bird dog podcast not to talk about our mutual love for fishing as well, but we'll do that some other time, maybe on a stream somewhere down your way. I've got my eye on a couple down there for the next few weeks. So anyway, but tell me, Legacy Sports, a lot of people may not recognize that name except from the logo that closes the commercial on my TV show for you. But tell us, what is Legacy Sports and what kind of brands are you guys working with?
Well, Scott, Legacy Sports is an umbrella company, if you will, that imports and exports and does some slight light manufacturing as well, here in the city of Reno. We've been here since 2006, relocated here from Alexandria, Virginia, where we spawned out of the original company of InterArms in Old Town Alexandria. And that's where the Howler rifles, that are one of our brands and our umbrella, big bread and butter part of our business, as well as pointer shotguns, which we bring into the country, both in semi-autos as well as in over-unders, which have been a phenomenal part of the business over the last 3 years. We also bring in a Citadel brand, which encompasses everything from product from the Philippines in 1911s and 45s, as well as home defense guns that are coming into the country at a rapid rate with current events in the country these days. And those are coming from Turkey also. So and we also have Nikko Sterling Optics under our umbrella, and some new additions as far as carbon fiber rifles from New Zealand, the Hardy rifles, just a good mix of overall brands that we're bringing into the country that are mostly recreationally oriented for outdoorsmen, shooting enthusiasts, guys that are bench rest shooters, varmint hunters, deer hunters, big game hunters, as well as upland hunters with the shotguns, clay targets. And, you know, we've gotten into some of the scholastic shooting stuff as well, too. So quite a broad spectrum of product, honestly, Scott.
Well, you know, in this day and age, if you're not diverse, then you're probably going to be sinking or at least circling the drain very frequently. I'll never forget, it's been a long time ago, but I was astounded when I realized that so many of the brands we know and love, if you will, or we grew up with or were familiar with, those brands are simply logos that are attached to a gun that's made somewhere else. And I mean the bigger brands as well as the ones that we're still getting to know a little bit. Have you got a feel for how much of the the firearms business is actually importing versus manufacturing?
You know, I don't have the overall number, but I can tell you that it's a huge part of the industry. Now, obviously, there's people that are trying to think of ways around current events in the economy or directions of the political winds with tariffs in certain countries and stuff like that, where people are considering bringing more manufacturing back here to the United States for cost purposes. But for workmanship, labor, materials, all the above, just in the shotgun world alone, would say, you know, we work with two factories, and we are literally every morning, we are on the phone with our factories every morning, talking to them about updates on where we're at with shipments that are either being flown in from their facility, where they're going to land here in the United States to be distributed efficiently, or whether or not they come directly to Reno here. I'll give you a classic example of how nimble we are to try and make sure the products are distributed as fast as they can into the American market. Here we have guns today that are coming from Turkey, two different manufacturers. And like I was alluding to earlier, right now the home defense shotgun stuff is kind of crazy, but those same factories that make our home defense shotguns are the same factories that make our semi-autos as well as our over-unders across the board. And those factories are able to give us updates every morning and telling us how many they're going to produce, how many they're going to ship, what gauge, what length, what model, and then we take that and apply that to our schedule of open orders across the board. And then, for instance, right now we're bringing shotguns into Houston instead of Reno. And when they hit Houston, they get separated. This way, we're saving a week's time to get them out onto the market to try and help people out with their deliveries. Otherwise, we would normally bring them here to Reno. So these things are the kind of things that we have to look at on a daily basis, you know. And then there's always, we talk at SHOT Show and we talk at the various shows or Pheasants Fest or any of the other trade shows in the industry, and we talk about new product every year and that kind of stuff. So we just started talking today, discussions, you know, for the new catalog for next year and all the new product that's going to be introduced and new models being, or if you have factory changes, that kind of stuff. There really is quite a wide gamut of topics to talk about when you are bringing guns in from outside the country. And of course, making sure you're getting the best price you can too to get them here.
Well, and that's all part and parcel. The other thing that you alluded to, and that in previous conversations you've mentioned, most people will simply put all of those guns in a container and put it on the slowest boat they can find and ship it over here at their leisure. But you're responding to the market in ways that are a little bit more unique, aren't you?
Yeah, I think we're very lucky because, again, like I said, we're always meeting, if not once, twice a day, the purchasing team, the marketing team, the sales team, and so forth down the, as well as the CFO, you know, on, you know, the dollars you have to be able to be creative, fortunately, to go get stuff and make things happen instead of, you know, the standard ways to put it on a container and it takes, you know, 60, 90 days to get it across the ocean, you know, get it to your facility, you know, and then you kind of plan things out with only a certain amount of deliveries throughout the year, be it seasonal for needs for upland season, that kind of stuff. But now we had to crank things up. And so we were fortunate within our buying power and prowess that we were able to fly product in huge quantities instead of put it on a boat and catch up with the demand that's going on right now in the industry.
Incredible.
And I mean, I'm talking about a lot of guns that are going on right now for a variety of reasons that are none of which are really good, but it is what it is. And, you know, like I said, I always look at these things that are cyclical within the industry about the popularity of guns, be it for home defense or for going to go hunting this year because of they want to make sure they're going to have meat in the freezer or they're going to have get outdoors instead of being cooped up inside or, they're going to take on, you know, hunting for the first time. The numbers are going to grow this year. And it's exciting because when you do have this influx of all these new shooters across the board or people buying firearms purchases are at an all-time high. And it seems like the optimistic part of that is that you have an opportunity to engage and get these people into the shooting sports, new people.
Yeah, you
that's
know,
what it
is. And we've talked about this before, and it always puzzles me that the missing link in this transactional process is they buy a gun, I don't care what kind of gun it is, and then nobody knows how to reach that person directly. We have vast surveys and research that says how many people bought guns last year, how many people bought 12-gauge shotguns last year, but nobody is able to extend that outreach program to the guy who was actually taking delivery on that gun. What are you guys doing in that world to at least try and help with the transition from gun purchase to becoming an active sportsman, for example?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I actively, I put on my marketing hat here instead of the sales side. And it's funny how the two overlap, honestly, very much day to day. And a natural thing for me was because we're shipping a lot of product out of here and we have control of what goes into our shipping boxes, et cetera, besides an owner's manual, you know, and safety tips and all that kind of stuff. And there's the opportunity to put stuff in that is related to either conservation groups, special interest groups, be it the NRA, certain state rifle and pistol associations, the NSSF, you know, safeties issues and locks and all this kind of stuff. So we offer that stuff to all the conservation groups to be able to provide that to us so that we'll put it into the box so the consumer, the end user, when he takes that gun home and takes all his goodies out of there, there's a nice little bag in there that has, you know, a card on an intro to the NRA where they get a discount on a membership or a trial subscription to one of the publications for Bugle or SCI or QDMA or Rough Grouse Society or Pheasants Forever. Those are the kind of things that we hope that people will, you know, look at it as they're entertaining getting into the shooting sports with a new firearm that have never been down that road. Hopefully we'll enlighten them to and want them to engage at some point. But I think you and I, like I said, have had this discussion that there has to be another way that we could get a little bit more aggressive with that opportunity that sits in front of us.
And we're all trying to do our part in that world. And I thank you for supporting all of those groups, because every little bit helps, and you're doing more than a little bit there. You know, before we get too far afield, let's lay out the important credentials. You've got one of those funny looking dogs. In fact, funnier looking than my dog. Tell me a little bit about your own upland bird hunting and bird dog experiences.
Oh, I've been a bird hunter ever since I was a kid growing up in Pennsylvania. I loved always hunting grouse, and a lot of times I didn't have a bird dog when I was younger. It seems like the dogs I hunted with were for cottontail with my grandfather, who had a bunch of beagles. But other than that, I was always once in a while fortunate to hunt with somebody with Brittany's or Labradors, hunting waterfowl. But when I ended up, just before I moved here from Virginia, I acquired my first Griffin wire hare, who became the companion of a chocolate lab that I had. It was a phenomenal chocolate lab. And the two together became frickin' frack hunting pair that were just comical but very serious in the field. And I think I immediately became attached to this Griffin wire hare breed that I'd never been familiar with, in not only their ability in the field as a bird dog, all around kind of dog, honestly. They'd hunt anything you put them on if you did. But if you really, truly focused them on upland birds, they excel at it. Mine, the current one I have, I'm on my second one now, is such a quail hunting maniac. He would rather hunt quail than anything else. It's weird in a sense. I would think he'd rather hunt chucker or pheasant when I get into him. Don't get me wrong, he loves it, but you can tell that there's a fever that comes over him when he either hears a quail, sees a quail, or smells a quail. He becomes a whole nother dog. And then at the same time, as you well know, at home, if people didn't know you had a hunting dog, they'd look at that goofy, long-haired, funny, curly-haired thing and say, "What is that clown of a dog?" Because they are so goofy and such a personality that it's just, they're like Jekyll and Hyde, when they're home or when they're getting the truck.
Well, yeah, you guys were the original doodle owners, you know, back before it was fashionable. That's how that came about, I'm sure. Yeah, but, you know, the dog loves the quail, but what do you love about all of this stuff?
Well, I love just being able to get out. You know, unfortunately, I don't hunt nearly as much as I used to. I know everybody says that's hard to believe, because, and I can tell you, the only reason they think that way is because I've become accustomed to hunting close to home and finding little honey holes I can take the dog to and hunt close to home on a weekend or a day away. You know, my trick is, you know, finding hunting spots that are in a 10-hour radius of where I live to be able to get to them and back with the workload that I have these days. But it's such a release to get out with a good working dog and watch them do what they can do, what's in their DNA, what's bred into them. And following that dog for a whole day as a companion, and then being able to, you know, scratch a few birds here and there and bring them home is just, to me, is very rewarding, quite honestly. It's just, and it's fun to teach them and train them, even though a ton of the DNA is in them. Just simple things. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, whistle training on dogs. I think almost every dog should be trained on a whistle, quite honestly, as far as I'm concerned. But I've educated a few people on that because of the whistle training that I've had ingrained in Labradors for bird hunting and waterfowl hunting. I carried a lot of that over into this Griffin that people look at me funny that have other Griffins, like, "Really? Your dog will do that?" And I said, "Yeah. He works on hand signals. He works on whistle commands. And it's a complete joy to watch it from an elevated position when he's in the brush." It's, and I'm sure you enjoy it just as much too. If you're on the high ground and can see your dog doing what he's doing, it really, really raises that level of entertainment, quite honestly.
Yeah. It's like a doggy amphitheater.
That's right. Yeah, it truly is. And you don't get a lot of those opportunities because it's a lot of flatland if you're hunting those kind of birds pushed out in the brush, unless you're a crazy chucker hunter.
Yeah, exactly. Watch one of my shows. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and we need to riff on this for just a moment. I just sent off a story I was assigned for, of all magazines, Pheasants Forever, but it was all about valley quail and my passion for them. I seem to be getting a lot of assignments from magazine editors about, well, what do you love most? And the problem is I have to start making a list. So that one just went off, and I could tell you, I could talk all day about that. In fact, I ought to do that sometime. But in the meanwhile, what is it about those valley quail that get you so psyched up?
Well, you know, there's days when they can really, really, run you ragged. They can run like hell. I mean, they run. But if you can catch up to a good covey of quail and bust them up into the thick sage here in the area where we live here, we hunt along the Truckee River, which flows out of Lake Tahoe. It's a beautiful trout fishery, but it's also a wonderful place where it provides water for a lot of birds, be it waterfowl or upland birds, as well as, you know, chucker and quail, etc. And I like hunting along the Truckee River, A, because it's a water source for the dog. On a hot day sometimes in the fall, you always have that water accessible to him if he's roaming, as well as the water you have on yourself. But to catch birds in those areas, to me, is just, it's fun. It's a shooting challenge to begin with. Low-flying quail taking off, you know, any direction you can walk. They seem to always like to fly out the back door and outsmart you a lot of times. They sit tight sometimes, and then once you've busted the covey, all that. So I like calling to them. I'm an avid turkey hunter, so anything that has calling and interacting with the bird, I really, really enjoy. Good friend of mine, Jim Matthews, is an excellent caller. I don't know if you know Jim.
Nice guy.
Right? Really great guy. He makes phenomenal quail calls as well. But he's always been an advocate of, you know, calling quail and getting the responses and understanding the calls of the quail. And I swear to God, I believe my dog understands that vocabulary.
No, and he also speaks Dutch, but that's another story.
He tunes it in, man. His radar tunes in to the sound of a quail, the excited sound of the quail as they start, you know, chuckling a little bit, you know, they're feeding. Yeah, he seems to get more and more educated every time, as do I, as I follow him to the field. But yeah, I love chasing quail. I love the sportiness of the shot on the wing, especially if you're shooting an over under, you know, getting two clean shots and getting lucky enough to get, you know, two birds in your sight pulling away from you, or a hard right or a hard left. You know, that's all just fun stuff. And I find myself shooting 20 gauges more and more, it seems like, over the last few years. And now that we have a lot of options, obviously being in the gun business, shooting the 410 has been a big thing this last couple of years. I don't think I'll ever probably put a 410 in my hand to hunt quail, but I've done it with the doves this last couple years. It's been a lot of fun. And again, that Griffin will hunt doves. It'll hunt ducks. It'll hunt quail. It'll hunt waterfowl, everything. Quail is where it's at, I think, here in the valley. And here in Nevada, everybody here's a chucker hunter. You know that.
Yeah.
You know, but I just as soon would like to chase the quail. If you can find them, and the numbers have been good the last couple of years, and I think a lot of people just kind of shy away from them and don't chase them nearly as much as they do here in Nevada for chucker.
Well, no doubt about it. And I joke about it, but after the third day of chucker hunting, quail hunting sounds pretty darn good. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. That's Andy McCormick with Legacy Sports. You hopefully know him best for his pointer shotguns. I'm Scott Linden, who shoots a pointer shotgun. And we're talking about all things firearms. Well, we will be in a moment or two, I promise you. But one last question for you, Andy, when it comes down to this kind of stuff. You did mention this, and I just want your take on it, because I'm a big believer as well. You mentioned whistle training. What is it about that you think is so important to a bird hunter and a bird dog?
Well, I think for any, let's put it even further, drill it down. I think for any dog owner, I think it's a safety thing. And I learned this firsthand with my chocolate lab when I was hunting him in rice checks. or outlets that had, you know, pipe flows that drain out of the water system. And if your dog is retrieving a bird close to a water pipe exit that could shoot him through the pipe and out the other end, and he doesn't know any better because, you know, how dogs are so fixated on the retrieve and the here, heel command, and sometimes it's to their own detriment. So if you have that whistle, you can stop him. You can turn him and get him out of trouble. If you have a dog running for, could be a road system, and there's a vehicle coming, you can stop him with a whistle. If you lose your dog, you can find him. You know, if you don't have a GPS collar on him or a sounder or beeper, he will come to the whistle. So I think that basic thing itself is worth its weight in gold, quite honestly.
Excellent. Glad to hear it from you as well as from me. I'm sure it is all about safety, and that's one way to do it. I've written about that, and I truly believe it. And in the background, you're hearing my cue. That cue says, Andy, take a break. Relax a moment while I make a little money here and pay off the bills. Starting with Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, DRTIMS.com. That's where you learn all about the formulations he has available to you. Last week I mentioned something that it's a pet peeve of mine. You know, the price of so many dog food bags stays the same, but the weight of those bags gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, I refilled Flick's dog food box today. I got one of those dispenser gizmos. And all 40 pounds went up and over and onto my shoulder. And I realized, once again, one of the nice things about Dr. Tim's, on top of all the great formulations and the care that he puts into those formulations, you can still buy a 40-pound bag and get good measure, good value for your purchase. And if you want even more good value, remember, your first order is a 30% discount. Just use the code UplandNation at drtims.com, DRTIMS.com. And if you heard that message, it's because you're taking care of your ears on the range and hopefully in the field as well. That's Jack Homa's hope too, as well as mine, at ESPAmerica.com. ESP stands for Electronic Shooter's Protection. If you're still putting up with those silly foam 99-cent earplugs or something else that doesn't digitally somehow enhance your abilities as well as protect your eardrums from those cumulative and permanent hearing loss attacks that every shotgun shot makes, consider taking a look at ESPAmerica.com. That is where you will find 6 different choices, something to meet your budget no matter what, all custom fit, 100% wall-to-wall protection because they are custom fit. It's all at ESPAmerica.com. Did you hear that? I knew you could. I'm working hard with Flick these days, and speaking of Andy's recollection of those funny noises that the quail make while we were out at lunch today, we heard one that you're lucky when you get close enough to hear them kind of muttering to each other, and that's how I describe it. It's not that pit-pit-pit alarm call, and it's not the that they do when they're looking for each other at night and in the morning. It was just the one that says, hey, I'm over here. Where are you? Hey. Can you talk? Anyway, while I was training Lick, we heard it not 20 yards away, and it was so fun. But I was training him with my sunglasses on because it's so darn hot and bright out here. And I realized, of course, halfway through the training session, he was not responding like he should. And the reason is I had those sunglasses on. Now, I don't know if the eyes are the window to my dog's soul, but they are the portal to my dog's understanding of commands. And the reason, in my book at least, the theory is they can't figure out who the hell's behind those dark glasses. You look like an alien or a bug or something else, but you sure don't look like yourself unless he can see your eyes. If you're having trouble with your dog's compliance, following directions, or especially at a distance, you might consider taking your sunglasses off and see if all of a sudden he becomes a much smarter dog. At least, that's been my opinion over the last 5 wire hairs. Maybe it'll be yours as well. Okay, so, on top of everything else, Andy, did I put you to sleep?
Oh, no, not at all.
Good. All right. Hopefully, nobody else either.
I find it interesting with the sunglass thing. I've never heard that before.
Well, I learned it the hard way, and I keep learning it. So consider trying that with your guy someday. Although it sounds like he's a super dog anyway, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, he just turned 2 not too long ago, but, you know, God, I swear he keeps still growing every time I kind of take a good look at him. I look at him, God, are you taller? Are you longer? They seem to get longer and lankier.
And
I stretch out on the floor, and you're like, holy cow, look how long he is.
Well, good. That's better than some of the, we have a Griffon in our training group, and he's not even a year yet. He's all head and feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Half of that head is hair too, but that's his problem, not mine. Yeah, or that's Frank's problem, my training buddy. So there. All right. So let's focus a little bit. Let's get back to kind of the industry and all of that. I'm just curious as all get out. I'm probably lobbing a softball question at you, but in the shotgun gauges, is it still 12 gauge dominating the market?
You know, I'd say it's neck and neck with 12 gauge and 20 gauge.
Yeah.
Has been extremely, you know, back and forth between the two. And there's definitely been a surge in the last couple years of the other sub gauges as well. Like I said, 28 gauge has seemed to come on pretty good, as well as, like I said, 410. And that's probably because we sell a fair amount of youth over under 410s and over under 20 gauges as well. There's not a whole lot of those out on the market available at a really good price for kids and smaller sized individuals or women, or you can call it a compact shotgun, a youth gun, a women's gun. It's all pretty much a shorter length of pull and a shorter barrel is what it is. And we do sell quite a few of those. And I'll tell you, I've had this conversation with you too, Scott, about having worked in this business for close to 40 years, and a lot of it in retail in Southern California, of all places, in the gun business, with a company called Turner's Outdoorsman. I remember when I first started there, God, it was back in the late 80s, and the number one gun for a first-time gun buyer, bird hunter, et cetera, was like an 870 pump 12-gauge. You know, you came in and got them on sale for dub season, and your ammo and your dub stool and all that. It was like $199 to $249, something like that, for an 870. And then by the time I had left Turner's in 2003, the standard entry-level gun for a bird hunter at that time seemed to be a Beretta 390 or 391, a $799 gun, it seemed like. And so it definitely progresses as far, I think, as a first-time entry-level gun. So now the over-under business the last 3 years has been, instead of a seasonal business, has become a year-round business for us. It's so much so that we constantly are taking deliveries of over-under shotguns from our factories across the board, so that they're in stock all year long.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. And I'll tell you my theory, but first I should remind everybody that they are listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, the host. That's my good friend Andy McCormick with Legacy Sports Pointer Shotguns. My theory on that, Andy, and it bears out when I survey followers every year, when they're not hunting or training their dog, they're shooting clay targets. Those are the things they do. No closed season, no limit on clay targets, at least not in my state.
Yeah, and I think now that this COVID stuff is kind of opening up, I just heard today how boat sales are through the roof because there's no sports, there's no football, no baseball, none of that stuff. So people are looking for other ways. So I think you're going to see an opportunity too for the shooting sports in that area to grow even more. You get out and shoot clay or buy your own little, you know, thrower, be it a handheld or something else that you can throw clay with and a box of white flyers, and off you go. You got entertainment galore for the camping trip with the kids, in a place you can be out on BLM land somewhere and have a hoot.
Absolutely. All right. So tell me, what is the, I think it's obvious that the industry in large part is probably balls to the wall, as good as any time when a Hillary Clinton or a Barack Obama is running for president. Is it all of the above? And we know some of those things, like you alluded to, it's the crazy folks in the People's Republic of Seattle who are making everybody a little less secure, and it's the diseases, and it's who knows what else. Have you got any more theories on what else might be fueling that?
Well, you know, it all started, honestly, with the origins of the COVID. Got people kind of wondering about, you know, food supplies, security of how often you'll be able to get food. You start hearing about pork shortages, chicken shortages, beef shortages, you know, aside from the toilet paper and everything else. And then you had people wondering about encroachment of security issues because, you know, he had protests had started from just being locked down, forced not to be able to go to work or move around in your own way and your freedoms and rights. And then you had then it got to the poor policing situation that happened in Minneapolis that created more unrest with rioting and protests. Then you had, you know, the looting and burning of commercial establishments. And next, then you've got the defunding of police departments. You've got crime rates escalating all over the country at this point that you're not hearing be reported at all. That is amazing. So, and then you have the elections coming. So there's all kinds of stuff across the gamut that are escalating firearm sales. Now, the interesting part is, you know, a large part of it is home defense shotguns. You know, there's the AR-15 crowd, and then there's, you know, ammunition are all scarce. But what is shocking is that we're selling a ton of, you know, deer hunting, big game hunting rifles. I think I was sharing with you that here in Nevada, they had an additional 50,000 people put in for big game tags. So that just tells you that people are planning to go hunting this year that didn't before, to either put meat in the freezer or to just get away and be in the open outdoors and relax and, you know, a little mental relaxation, organic, true organic food, go get some put on the table, or they're just going to be out of work. So, you know, there's a lot of different things driving that. And I think you're going to see this all the way across the board, also into the bird hunting in the fall. You're going to see more people, I think, than ever participating in pheasant hunting in the Midwest. I think chucker hunting, quail hunting, like we were talking about. I think small game hunting, all that stuff, you're going to see a bigger participation rate across the country, quite honestly. Shotguns, rifles, all of it.
Well, I can't agree more. You mentioned fishing as well. The same is true in and the other industry that I'm a part of is the RV industry. I end up, by the way, if anybody's out there looking for story assignments, I've got a whole bunch in the RV business now these days, but that business is booming right now as well. And it's all of these things, as you said, to a great degree, are the good old American way is, if you tell me I can't go out and recreate, the moment I can, I'm going to go. And here's what I'm going to do to do it. And we even saw that even before when we were locked down. We were not locked down. I watched so many people violate the governor's executive orders. It was almost hilarious. But so what else? What else about the market is so interesting to an insider like you that we may not know about? Tell me something we don't know about the firearms industry right now.
Well, I would say that my concern when we get to this point of gun sales being as rampant as they are is the ammunition companies being able to keep up, not run out of ammo, because that will stop firearm sales in a big way, like it did a couple years ago when we were running out of ammo you couldn't find 22 ammo.
Yeah.
So 22 rifle sales just stopped because nobody could buy it, or it was rationed. You couldn't buy, you know, more than two boxes a day or something like that. So the same is true right now with a lot of the handgun ammunition is pretty tight. There's a lot of manufacturers that are, you know, were literally booked up, some of them into next year already at capacities. So those are the things that, you know, you don't hear a whole lot about unless you're, you know, out in the sporting goods store on a regular basis looking at the ammunition shelves and what's available on the shelves.
You know, I never thought about it quite that way. I understand all of that. It makes all the sense in the world. But what you said clued me into why that mentality is the way it is. Check me on this. If I buy a new car, I'm going to go take it for a drive somewhere that day. But if I if I can't buy gasoline for that car, I'm probably not going to buy the car. Yeah, especially if I don't think I'm going to be able to buy gasoline next week or the week after or the week after. I mean, guns are the same way. I need instant gratification. And I'm sorry, I apologize. There's no 12-step program for it yet, and there probably never will be. But if you know, why would I, like you said, why would I buy a gun if I can't shoot it?
Right. Nine times out of 10, a guy walks into a firearm store, buys his favorite shotgun, rifle, handgun, what rimfire rifle, whatever. He obviously is, unless he has a whole stack of it at home, he's going to buy some of it to go along with his purchase. And if you can't, and if the guy on the other side of the counter says, yeah, I don't have any, I don't know when I'm going to see any, that kind of, you know, gives you a little pause and hesitation. So, you know, those are the things that worry people in the gun business.
By the way, pause and hesitation ought to be a Righteous Brothers song.
Okay.
So you're there. You got your finger on the pulse of all of this stuff. Do you see any looming shortages at the moment? I don't want you to send out a panic message or anything, but if you were to call me tomorrow off the record and say, Scott, you probably ought to go buy blank. Is there something?
Yeah, it depends where you live too.
Yeah.
You know, for availability and stuff like that. If you're out in a remote area or something like that, sometimes they can not see it for a while because the demand's not as high with a lower population. But in areas where the big population is, where a lot of people are buying these guns, sometimes it hits them pretty hard, and then they got to catch up. So handgun ammunition seems to be one of them. You know, so
sure.
I keep an eye on that one. You know, it's hard to run out of shotgun ammo, but it happens. I've seen it happen. Honestly, I've seen
sure.
it get low.
Well, especially if you're shooting a 16 gauge.
Yeah. And, you know, and the things we're going through right now and the volume of guns that we're putting onto the market, I can tell you that we haven't seen this kind of reaction within the industry since I've been in it. And I'm going all the way back to, you know, 92, to the Rodney King riots, to the Obama elections, to Clinton's, to Sandy Hook. All that stuff is paling in comparison to what we're seeing right now. And it's, you know, it speaks for itself what you see on the news in the evenings.
Yeah, that's ominous, but at least we're aware of it. Our eyes are wide open, and that's useful. Tell me about pull out the crystal ball in your lower right hand drawer. It's right next to that bottle that you and I share when we're together in Reno. Pull out the round clear glass device down there, and let's make a prediction. What do you think's happening in the shotgun market? Do you see any new trends? Do you see any interesting things that are happening in that world?
Like I said, I think the continued increase of over under purchases, and like I said, the 410 market kind of continues to excel from the turkey hunting aspect. I'm an avid turkey hunter, so the last couple of years I'll never shoot a 12 gauge again at turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they have the new 410 ammo out on the market that is just extremely deadly, the tungsten ammo that's available. So that's kind of going to continue, I'm sure. In the sub gauges, I think you're going to continue to see sub gauges Excel 20s and 28s for guys that are, you know, getting older like myself that, you know, not that I mind recoil, but I surely like a light gun in the field, you know, carrying it all day. You know, mm-hmm. I'm the kind of, I'll jump into the truck, grab the dog and, you know, and cut him loose and grab as much water as I can and go for the day. And so having a nice lightweight gun in the field, I think, bird hunting just as much as anything else, deer hunting, a light rifle is something people like. And I see trends going towards, something more lightweight in the field the best you can. That's hard to do on a 12 gauge because, you know, you give up a little bit. You know, if you're going to shoot a lightweight 12 gauge, you're going to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. So I'm thinking lightweight sub gauges are going to be trending. And I think you're going to see more and more youth shotguns continuing to come into the field. I heard some statistics today from a very reputable influencer that's part of our pro staff as well, from Randy Newberg. Randy told me that he's seen for the first time in a long time in a lot of his polling with his stuff that the participation of women is now steadily growing into the numbers that he's seen. It's a solid 10% of his viewers are now crept into that 10% realm where it was always in the 7, 8, 9, never went above that for years. He said it's done that now with women that are taking 140% of the people taking hunter safety classes are women. So those are things I'd say you're going to see trending topics with, quite frankly.
Well, how about over there? By the way, that's Andy McCormick with Legacy Sports, Pointer Shotguns, among other things, in that umbrella organization. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation Podcast. Anything that you are allowed, without having to kill us afterwards, anything you can talk about in the way of what's coming down the pike from Legacy and Pointer?
We've got a couple transitions where we've moved some of our factories production into some other facilities for various reasons, from price, QC improvements to delivery improvements, relations, all that kind of stuff. So you'll see a couple things change within the program, like the Arista over under shotgun that we have is now going to be called the Acrius, that we're like an inline change into the Acrius, pretty much same size, shape, and models, but a little bit finer points that are a little nicer that people will notice as we bring it into the field, just starting to ship now. Same is true on the Phenoma shotgun. We've been able to transition that into another semi-auto that's very, very similar, but again, improved in some of the features that you'll notice. New Field Tech and Sport Tech models on the Pointer line that'll be coming. And again, in all the sub gauges, and seems to be very popular. Some of the wood Cerakote models we have seem to be very popular in the semi-autos, especially the bronze, the midnight bronze and gray Cerakote models look really nice in the wood. Guys seem to like that a lot. So you're going to see more of that. You know, one of the other things that we haven't talked about that we offer here that we do in-house is our own hydrographics and Cerakoting, which is unique to us within the industry and the size and numbers that we do, not only for Legacy Sports here in-house, but also for a lot of the other manufacturers out there, including everything from sunglasses to multi-tools to thermoses, you name it. It's come through our facility one way or the other and been Cerakoted or hydrographics applied to it.
I'm tempted to just bring a truckload of stuff and just leave it off and let you guys mess with it and then have the coolest looking multi-tool around, things like that. You see all of this and you hear about it because you're in sales and marketing. You're in effect at both ends of the transaction. If there is one thing you wish we all would do, all of us bird hunters out there with our shotguns, if there's one thing you wish we should do or should never do, what would it be, Andy?
Never put your gun away wet. Because I don't care how long you've hunted all day, how tired you are, you know, first and foremost, take care of that dog, you know, put him up, take care of him, you know, check his feet, check his paws, all that stuff. And when you put your gun away, make sure you take care of your gun. You know, it's rust is an element that happens and a result of its environment. And so in customer service, sometimes we'll get a call that, you know, guy's really upset, his gun's rusted. Well, where did you leave it? Rust only happens for one reason. So sometimes, you know, those are the simple things you can do is take care of your gun, you know, a little bit of oil, be nice to it. And by no means am I, I'm like the Samsonite gorilla and Peter Pan all in one when it comes to gun care.
Yeah.
I use them. But at the same time, you know, once in a while I'll mess up and I'll have some moisture on a gun and throw it into the gun sleeve. And next thing I open it up and it's just, you know, a mess. And I'm like, oh, how did I let that happen? So I'd say that's one of them, you know. Oh,
that is a good one, definitely. Gun, you know,
buy yourself a Tico tool, you know, and run it through it at the end of the day when you're done, be it shooting on a sporting clays range or trap field or finishing up a day in the field with a dog, you know. Check the pads on that dog and then run a Tico tool through your gun, wipe it down, throw it in a case, and then, you know, grab a drink and, you know, head on your way home kind of thing. It's a
Love it.
Simple thing. Quite honestly.
Love it. You know, as you well know, Neil Young says rust never sleeps, and you've learned that the hard way, as have most of us. But if the new rule around the Upland Nation podcast is treat your gun as nicely as you treat your dog, you probably can't get far from right.
That's true.
Great.
And, you know, and the other thing I would say is, you know, get out and shoot, you know, clays more often when you know, in the off time. You know, it's you'd be surprised how much that muscle memory is important, you know, especially when you're, you know, quick snap shooting kind of stuff and when you're winded and all that. You need all the advantage you can sometimes, you know, out there in the field. So, you know, practice really, really is a big part of being a successful bird hunter, especially if you're shooting with sub gauges. And I forget where I saw it the other day. I was just flipping through a publication looking for something, and I happened to catch a guy. It looked like he was focused on like a single tree or just lined up of targets on the right, targets on the left. And with his shotgun, he was focused on flipping the targets, you know, like a rimfire target. You know, you shoot it and flip it.
Oh, yeah.
To the other side. So and it looked like he was shooting at that target, very focused, going from target to target to target, as opposed to a clay target going through the air. It was just mounting the gun quick and being on target. Mount quick on target, you know. My big thing is nose to knuckle, you know, on the gun and pointing my index finger right down the fore end of the gun, you know, to wherever the target goes. Just simple shooting techniques, you know, keeping them in mind all the time will make you a successful bird hunter in many ways.
This guy lives, eats, breathes firearms, folks, so I hope you wrote that down. If not, run back and replay that segment at least. You don't have to, you could block out my talking, but listen to Andy. Andy McCormick is the Executive VP of Marketing and Sales at Legacy Sports, one of my television sponsors, Pointer Shotguns, and all sorts of other good stuff, and soon to be a hunting and fishing buddy, because I'm coming your way, Andy. Look out. It was a
it was
so fun talking with you. We'll do this again sometime. In the meanwhile, stay cool down there in the high desert. And if you do get a low, you know, a low pressure system, send it up this way as well. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you.
And you don't go anywhere. We've got a lot more to talk about, including a state that you probably hadn't thought about for quail hunting in our This Land Is Your Land segment. But first, a couple messages real quick. Appreciate your giving them your kind attention as well. Gunner Kennels is number one on the list, at least for flicking me, or is that flicking I? However it is, the probably state-of-the-art when it comes to dog crates. The only double-walled dog crate out there, 1,200 five-star reviews, free shipping, They'll finance your purchase, and your dog is worth every nickel of that thing. Take the Fit Finder quiz, have a little fun with their augmented reality. You could put your dog next to that kennel and see how they look together. And I can assure you they will not only look good, your dog will be safe in that Gunner kennel. Find out what's new at gunner.com. Watch some of the videos. They're eye-opening, to say the least. If you didn't think that they were a tough kennel, you watch what they do with them in those videos, and you will come away a believer. I know it. I believe it myself. That's why Flick rides in a Gunner kennel. And speaking of believing in it, Dogtra's TNB dual collar system is the key to Flick's steadiness to wing, shot, and fall. Yep, two kennels, say, hey, Gunner, I'm going to have to charge you extra for that. Anyway, two collars, one dog, using Rick and Ronnie Smith's method, which is an outgrowth of Uncle and Dad Delmar Smith. You know what we're talking about, that flank pressure. Well, we're doing it with the collar, too, and it is working. It's easy to do because there is no toggling from one collar to the other. There's two sets of buttons there. All you got to do is keep your thumb in the right place or your finger in the right place, and you can do all the things you like to do to a dog with an electric collar. Now, for Flick, the softy that he is, I seldom use the electric stimulation. I use the vibrate feature a lot. And then I'm also teaching him to respond to the little tone, not the big beeper, but the little tone. Now, there's one other thing I like about this collar system, and that is the horn for the beeper. It points down, and it's integral to the rest of that one single black box on the collar. So your poor dog is not dragging 4 pounds of collar along with him when he's on a long hunt. Learn more and get that 10% discount by using the code SLUN10 at dogtra.com. This land is your land. In large part, we own it. Out here in the West, we own virtually all of it. And much of it is open to free hunting. Buy a license, lace up your boots, and head for the open spaces. In this case, we're talking about one of my favorite states. Just talked with a future podcast guest from New Mexico. If you watch Wing Shooting USA, my TV show, you saw us hunting down there a year or two ago. Can't wait to get back. If you're considering a snowbird kind of a trip for late season warm area, everything relative being relative, then check out the bobwhite hunting near the Pecos region of New Mexico. It's just about at the Texas border. Mearns quail are all over Catron County, in the Cibola National Forest, the San Andres Mountains, and the Sacramento Mountains. So, whatever your pleasure when it comes to quail, they've got them down in New Mexico. I'll put this up on my website, findbirdhuntingspots.com, so you can get a more detailed accounting of what we found down there and what we're doing with that information the year after next. And in the meanwhile, if you want to do something with it between now and then, good luck. I wish I could go along with you. This Land Is Your Land is also brought to you by HuntHuronSD.com, Huron, South Dakota, where the pheasants outnumber the people. And ESP America, electronic shooters protection. Learn more about all the ways you can get custom-fitted wall-to-wall protection for your delicate eardrums at espamerica.com. Sure enjoyed my talk with Andy McCormick at Legacy Sports, pointer shotguns, etc., etc., etc. Good buddy. Always something fun to talk about. And, hey, I did it. We didn't even talk about trout fishing, at least not on the podcast. I'll be calling him tomorrow on that one, though. Thank you again for listening. If you'd like to discuss anything you hear or would like to hear, talk to me at the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page. If you're so inclined, it would be very helpful to me if you would rate or review this podcast wherever you get your podcast. I sure would appreciate that. It helps in any number of ways, especially with keeping the sponsors happy and keeping me on the air, as it were. I hope you're getting out a little bit more, that in your state, you can actually drive around a little and have some fun. I'm Scott Linden. Thanks for listening.